Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
With over 14 million people forced to flee their homes, hundreds of thousands killed, sexual violence, starvation and disease widespread, the civil war in Sudan has created what aid agencies have described as the world's worst humanitarian disaster. For more on this, I'm joined by Peter Power, Executive Director of UNICEF in Ireland. Peter, thank you for joining us. You are currently in Sudan. Will you just talk us through what you've been witnessing there, what you've been seeing?
Good morning, Claire. Yes, I'm in the northeastern part of Sudan, one of the areas worst affected by the famine, which is increasingly gripping this country. Five areas are already in famine. We're told here by our people on the ground that five other areas are likely to fall into famine, and many other areas are at risk of famine. 3.2 million, that's more than half of Ireland's population, are suffering from malnutrition. And last year alone, UNICEF treated 560,000 children who are suffering from the most severe type of malnutrition, what we call severe acute malnutrition. These are children who need really high-level medical intervention to save their lives. So the situation is really serious. The violence is it's extremely violent conflict and making the distribution of humanitarian assistance very difficult. So all in all, this is a very complex and very difficult humanitarian crisis.
Mm-hmm. And given that you're there in the country, it's worthwhile just finding out from you how you're seeing that famine play out with your own eyes.
Well, it's heartbreaking, Claire. I have to say, just yesterday, I was in a stabilization centre, as the name suggests. That's just to stabilize children who are suffering from severe acute malnutrition. And to see the almost lifeless bodies of children just thrown on beds with their mothers, it would break your heart. And this was just one single nutrition center out of 1900 around the country who were facing similar problems. And to see these children really at death's door because of malnutrition, contributed by the fact that they have been forced from their homes. I think you mentioned the figure correctly at the top there, 14 million people, it's a staggering amount of people, have been forced from their homes. And that has affected their resilience, their access to food. They've had to move and move and move again. And when you see them, they're not in a great state, and their lack of access to proper nutrition is causing severe problems. And that's just nutrition. There are other issues, disease, as you mentioned, cholera. We treated 58,000 cases of cholera in recent months. Disease, diphtheria is a big problem, measles and polio. So all in all, this is just to see it in action, to actually see the children affected. It's quite distressing, I should say.
And the stabilisation centre, I mean, do those centres have access to the high nutrition food that they need, the medical care that they need to provide to those children and the mothers, of course, that you describe?
Yes, you know, so many of your listeners, Claire, will be familiar with these incredible treatments, such simple treatments, this high protein milk, technical name, we call it F75, F100, but it's like milk formula, as we know in Ireland, but it is super packed with incredible nutritional value and can literally bring children back from death's door. And then after that, they're given what most people in Ireland would know as this peanut paste, which is genuinely life-saving. Again, it's peanuts packed with massive amounts of protein, vitamins and minerals. And to see a child get that food and to recover so quickly, it's such a simple solution. And yet, as I said, 3.2 million children are in need of this. And there are health centres, but getting access to hard-to-reach areas. I'm talking about South Khartoum, particularly difficult at the moment. And, of course, in Darfur, there's a lot of fighting going on there at the moment with the RSF and the Sudanese armed forces really fighting a very, very bloody battle. Mm-hmm. And they are surrounding places and getting food into those places is very difficult.
Well, we might talk a little bit now about what has happened there to lead to this situation and to these millions of people being displaced. And you mentioned this civil war between the Sudanese armed forces and the rapid support forces. So you might just explain a little more around that and the background to it.
Well, very briefly, the army, the military here in Sudan has been divided for many years with different factions, different power struggles, and an offshoot, if I can say, of the military, although within the military, but almost a separate paramilitary force called the Rapid, the RSF. They effectively broke away from the main element military with all of the hardware they have and all of the manpower they have. They broke away to try to effectively take over the country from the Sudanese armed forces. So it's a civil war with both parties extremely well supplied with arms, not just from within Sudan, but from other countries, including Middle Eastern countries surrounding Sudan. So they're highly armed, highly organized. And some of the atrocities, there's no question they amount to war crimes. It's very violent. There's appalling instances, sexual violence being used as weapons of war. They're cutting off access to water for entire areas as a weapon of war, real violations of human rights. And of course, children are always the worst to suffer in these circumstances. It's a really harrowing situation, I have to say.
And people are being continuously then driven away from firstly their homes and then from wherever they choose to settle. It's continuous displacement, as I understand it. Is that right?
Yes, you're absolutely correct, Claire. There's so many people we met who were in relatively stable situation, despite Sudan being, very, very, at least one of the least developed countries in the world, but relatively stable. In other words, they were relatively safe. But with this conflict, as I said, between two highly armed groups breaking out with such intensity of violence, they had to move and move again. And Sudan, we must remember, is so huge, it's about the size of Western Europe. So to get from, what was a stable house, sometimes with a stable job, and to move into IDP camps, really distressing for people, very difficult to come to terms with their new situation. And again, as I mentioned at the top, the resilience over time, right, we're almost 2 years into the war now, the resilience over time begins to break down. And that's when malnutrition, lack of access to food and disease really all contribute to very difficult outcomes for children.
And I mentioned at the beginning that aid agencies like your own have described this as the world's worst humanitarian disaster. But it has also been described as the forgotten famine, the forgotten humanitarian disaster. Do you agree with that? And why is that happening?
Well, the first thing to say that, yes, it is a famine. The independent body charged with classifying famine have declared five areas of the country in famine at the moment. That's where children are dying. As we speak, Claire, children are dying every day. Every day, that's the definition of famine. In areas of this country where it's very, very hard to gain access to for humanitarian assistance. And yet I spoke to our mobile teams who negotiate with both sides of the armed conflict to bring in food to incredibly fragile and volatile areas, but they're still gripped with famine. And it's increasing. That's the worry about this. Why is it forgotten? Well, amidst other crises in the world, certainly Gaza has 100%, for Ireland, has really captured the attention of the Irish public because of long-standing historical issues. And there's so much happening in the media, as you know more than anybody, Claire. It's very hard to get cut through to explain to Irish people the real difficulties that this country is in and the millions of children who are now subject to famine. So it's a multitude of reasons, very hard to identify one particular reason. But I would say the focus on Gaza is huge in the whole humanitarian space.
And we might just touch on that because I'd like to get your thoughts on what's happened this week in Gaza in a moment. But coming back to the very size of Sudan, the fact that your people are there working, UNICEF people and groups that you support are working is a great thing to hear. But access has to be a problem. If you have this fighting and this ongoing displacement, can the people you need and your staff get to where they need to get to help the people in most dire need?
Well, it's an excellent question, because the issue of access is one which we confronted again and again this week. And I should say UNICEF isn't the only humanitarian organisation operating here in the ground. There are many other organisations, including Irish organisations, dealing with what is a colossal crisis. But gaining access means being neutral, being completely impartial, being apolitical, building trust with both sides, and then negotiating. Like this, checkpoints are everywhere, trying to get from one checkpoint to the next checkpoint, like multiple checkpoints to try and get to those areas in most needs. It requires a lot of specialization. We met with our logistics and distribution specialists, and we were in awe of their ability to negotiate their way around roadblocks, physical and metaphorical roadblocks, to get aid into those areas. And still, it is very, very difficult. The danger which our people are putting themselves in, it's just quite amazing. And to see them and to hear the work that they're doing is phenomenal.
Well, that's highly dangerous, isn't it, for them? If you have active fighting, a civil war, and they're trying to get through and to convince these people, soldiers on both sides, to trust them.
It is. It's every time the mobile teams go out into conflict areas, they are putting their lives at risk. Because their mission is a higher one that they really, really believe in. And they have our absolute utmost admiration, but they're professionals as well. They have been doing this in not just Sudan and many other countries. We've over 350 people here. They've got decades of experience on how to negotiate their way around these roadblocks, how to bring in, like, a big issue is water. Water has been used, access to water has been used as a weapon of war here. So one of the big areas we're involved in is trucking in water, literally truck by truck into areas, providing vaccinations for children. As I said, children are dying from preventable diseases, cholera, diphtheria, measles, polio. So trying to get vaccinations into these areas and to keep them at the correct temperature. You'll be familiar with the cold chain, trying to get them all the way to the farthest to reach and hardest to reach areas at the correct temperature, into the arms, into the mouths of children. And I saw it myself only yesterday. I actually distributed and put vaccines into the mouths of children yesterday, and to see how incredibly life-saving it is. It's quite inspirational. And that was just one child out of millions and millions that need assistance here.
And Peter, tell me the broader issue then of the new American administration and the cuts that we have seen to USAID or US aid. Is that impacting UNICEF's work in Sudan?
Well, what I would say, just generally, because this is a global issue, I'd say that the cuts that have been announced, and cuts which are anticipated for a multitude of humanitarian organisations, UNICEF and others, will limit our ability to reach millions of families and children in dire need, both here in Sudan and around the world. Our global executive director has said that only in the last few days. Millions of children, like in Sudan, like in Gaza and other areas, they need to be vaccinated. They need food. They need education. 90% of the children, almost every single child here in Sudan, is not going to school. They need access to school. They need access to psychological support, social support, measles vaccinations, polio vaccinations, health support. And this requires a lot of resources. As I've been saying throughout this interview, this is complex work. Getting aid in is really only the first step, then distributing it in a professional way, very, very difficult work. And aid cuts, and it should be said, it's not just from the United States, but there are other countries involved here as well. Those will affect the ability of UNICEF and other organisations to reach millions of people.
I know UNICEF operates in an apolitical way, but are there any efforts underway to stop the fighting so that it makes your work doable?
There are certainly here in Sudan, there are attempts is about as far as I would go, Claire. We're not involved in those, obviously. We don't have the capacity. We don't have the mandate. It's not our area. But there are discussions in other countries, neighbouring countries, to try and get some element of a ceasefire. As we know from other areas in the world, a ceasefire, not at least our own country, once you have a ceasefire, once you have some modicum of peace, that allows space, that allows the environment from which longer-term political solutions can emerge between parties. But what the people here in Sudan need more than anything else at the moment is peace, because it's the unceasing violence and really high levels of intense violence that's really causing the issue, the cascade effect of this humanitarian crisis.
Now, Peter, before I let you go, we were talking to an incredible consultant vascular and trauma surgeon, Morgan McMonagall, a little earlier.
Oh, yes.
You know Morgan. Yes. He's in Gaza today. Yeah. He was there when all of those explosions happened overnight, the night before last. He did put in an incredible shift, and he explained to us, you know, declaring people dead, children in the main initially, and then carrying out all of those operations back to back. I mean, you must be incredibly disappointed from a UNICEF point of view that it seems the fighting has resumed in Gaza, making it a difficult job almost impossible there for people like those who are working with and for UNICEF.
Yes. People like Morgan, who has our absolute utmost admiration. They are on the front line. I myself was in Gaza just before the war broke out, met our people there, right on the front line, really, really difficult, extremely difficult circumstances. What happened here, Claire, was in the middle of the night. Bombs rained down on completely innocent children. Our latest figures from our people on the ground suggest 150 innocent children have lost their lives, and that today hundreds of children are presenting at hospitals and health centres, such as they are, in very, very difficult, with horrific injuries from this bombing. And we know what this is like because we've seen what it's like trying to deliver humanitarian assistance when the bombs are raining down. It's really, really difficult. And the killing thing is here, sorry to use that word, but what's so frustrating, so distressing, is that we were getting in 50 trucks a day of humanitarian assistance since the 17th of January when the ceasefire began. So our call is very clear: for the ceasefire to be reinstated, for humanitarian aid, which is an absolute obligation under humanitarian law, for humanitarian aid to flow as it has been, and for children particularly to be protected. That is our strongest call to the parties involved.
Well, Peter, thank you very much for joining us from Sudan. Peter Power is the Executive Director of UNICEF in Ireland.